All right. Well, thank you for joining us. My name is Jeff. I'm the pastor here at Crossroads, and I'm especially thrilled to be able to share this morning. If you're here today, you're here on a special day. This is we're having a prayer and healing service, and so we're orienting this service to come together as a body to pray for needs in our lives and needs in our communities. And we'll have an opportunity later in the service where if you have something in your life you would like prayer for, we'll have opportunities for our elders and our prayer team to pray for you. Before we get there, though, I'm going to share a brief message. There are some people that are skeptical, if I can be brief. But we're going to go for it. We're going to see. But before we get there, there's just a couple of housekeeping things. If you were here last week, I told you that, you know, come back because we're going to announce something. Since I came here, we've been looking for a worship leader. And that decision was really important to our elders because this is the person who's going to be leading us as a community in worship. And I'm fairly particular and picky, and so we wanted somebody who was the real article, somebody whose faith was mature and robust, and so we were able to extend an offer, and it was accepted to RG. RG, let me just tell you a little bit about RG, my brother from another mother, all right? I was looking for somebody who is the real article, who is the real deal, who is going to lead us from a place of excess, somebody who walked the walk and talked the talk, right? I met RG, and as you might have picked up on from his little testimony that he shared during worship, he's an Army vet. He was a medic in the Army. I'm a Marine, and so like I love Army guys. They're cool, not as cool as Marines, but they're cool. And, you know, we were having lunch down in San Jose, just getting to know each other. And I got to hear a little bit about his life and his walk. And his faith is so evident in his speech, in his life, that I knew he was the real deal. And then, you know, lo and behold, he's also like an awesome leader too. So we're really excited to have RG on board. I didn't announce in December because he was here, and then he had to go to the Philippines. And he went to the Philippines to see family, but he also went with an agenda. And he has a girlfriend who has been over there for a number of years now. And he put a ring on it. So RG is now engaged. Where is he? Is he turning different colors? He should be. There he is. So anyway, that's our announcement. We're really excited to have RG on the team. We're looking forward to all that God's going to do in him and through him to bless this congregation. And so I'd invite you to get to know him, take him to lunch, buy him some tacos. He's a really neat guy. All right. And okay, so now we're going to launch into a short message on prayer. I'm going to read the passage on which the teaching is based, and then we're going to get into it. We're going to be in Matthew chapter 6. We're going to start in verse 6 and read through verse 15. If you don't have a Bible, you can read it on the screen behind me. If you have a pew Bible, it's on page 817. This is smack dab in the middle of the Sermon on the Mount, and Jesus is telling his people how they should pray. Matthew 6, verse 6. But when you pray, go into your room, close the door, and pray to your Father who is unseen. Then your Father, who sees what is done in secret, will reward you. And when you pray, do not keep on babbling like pagans, for they think they will be heard because of their many words. Do not be like them, for your Father knows what you need before you ask him. This then is how you should pray. Our Father in heaven, hallowed be your name. Your kingdom come, your will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Give us today our daily bread, forgive us our debts, as we also have forgiven our debtors. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from the evil one. For if you forgive men when they sin against you, your heavenly Father will also forgive you. But if you do not forgive men their sins, your Father will not forgive your sins. This is the word of the Lord. You could preach 20 messages on that passage. There is so much in there. I just want to pull out a couple of things for us this morning before we go to prayer as a community, before we invite our elders up to pray for any needs that this congregation has. A couple of things. Verse 7. This is interesting. when we read this, I think we kind of impose some things on it from our modern perspective, right? When I read it, but when you pray, go into your room and close the door and pray to your Father who is unseen. And then in verse 7 it says, and when you pray, do not keep on babbling like pagans. This is interesting. When I read that, initially my assumption is we're talking about religious people and irreligious people, right? You've got some people who are praying good prayers to God and some other people who don't quite know what they're doing and maybe they're irreligious or secular, but that's not what's in view here. The assumption here is that everybody's praying. In fact, the words, do not go on praying like pagans. That's the Greek word paganos. And that literally means man of the country. See, the initial Christian missional strategy was to send people like Paul, like Timothy, to cities. Because ideas start in cities and they kind of spread outwards. And so in the first century, it was the people of the country that were and a pagan, would be a non-Christian religious person. Okay, you got that? So this is not a tension or a juxtaposition between irreligious people praying silly prayers and Christians praying a solid biblical prayer. This is religious people juxtaposed with Christians. Okay, do you see that? Now, this is so it's not a religious prayer. It's not like the tension isn't between religious and irreligious. It's between religious and Christian. Okay, and then verse 8 says this. This is interesting. And he's saying right now, Jesus is creating attention. He's saying, do not be like them. Do not be like them. And then he says, for your Father knows what you need before you ask them. Now, this is, a lot of people will take this passage to mean like, well, you shouldn't pray for stuff. You shouldn't pray for the needs of your life because your Father already knows that you need them. But that can't be true because he tells us just a little while later, give us this day our daily bread, right? What he's saying is do not be like them. And so there is a way that you could pray this prayer and have it be purely mechanical, right? And what Jesus is saying is it can't be like that. There is a basis on which your prayers are heard that you need to be cognizant of. If you're going to pray it, if you're going to pray this prayer with the right heart, there is a basis on which your prayers are heard that you need to be cognizant of. And that's what we're going to talk about today. The question is, on which basis are your prayers heard? And then we're going to talk about the practice of prayer briefly. Verses 7 and 8, check them out. Says, and when you pray, do not keep on babbling like pagans, for they think they'll be heard because of their many words. Do not be like them, for your Father knows what you need before you ask him. When you approach somebody to speak with them, there's always a basis for their conversation, right? If you walk up to a stranger on the streets, all right, there's only really two things you can ask them, okay? You can ask them for directions, and you can ask them what time it is. Right? Because they're an absolute stranger. It's a total stranger. There is no relational basis for this conversation. And really, the only two acceptable reasons to walk up to a stranger on the street is to ask them directions or for the time. All right? I just spent a couple of days up near Paradise in Chico. And, this kind of basis flexes with culture. They're a little more rural. You can walk up to somebody on the street and ask them for the time. Before you know it, you're in a 15-minute conversation. You're looking at pictures of their grandkids. But here in San Jose, it's a little different. Everybody's busy. Everybody's itinerant. Hey, I got to be somewhere. There's really only there. So the basis is very much related to the relationship you have with that person, right? If I go up to a stranger on the street, I can ask him what time it is. It's fine. There is no relationship there, but that's fine. We all have a kind of connection as humans. But I can't say, hey, can I have your backpack, please? They're not going to give it to you, right? Because the relationship's not there, all right? So there's a basis for a relationship. The deeper connection you have, the greater the basis for any kind of interchange or exchange there's going to be, right? I could ask my wife for a kidney probably, and she'd be okay with it. Because there's a basis for a relationship there. Now, there's essentially two ways that you can be in a relationship with someone. And these are polar opposites. Obviously, there's going to be gradations in the middle here, but all relationships kind of function this way. You can be in a business relationship with somebody, okay? A consumer-vendor relationship. And probably the closest parallel I can think of is like a landlord-tenant relationship, right? Been a renter for many years, probably going to be a renter for many years. And there's that's a business relationship. There's a kind of interchange there. I give money to somebody, right? And then they upkeep the property, and there's a kind of business relationship there. And there's really only two ways you can live in someone's house. It's if you're like a tenant or a boarder, or if you're a family, right? If you're a child or aunt, uncle, or something like that. The basis for many relationships are business relationships. The basis for our most profound relationships are familial, all right? There's a connection there. And this is why I want you, we're going to focus on just one part of the Lord's Prayer this morning. It's verse 9. This then is how you should pray. Our Father who art in heaven. Notice he doesn't begin it our King who art in heaven. He doesn't begin it our Creator who art in heaven. He says our Father who art in heaven. Wow, can you imagine that? That's the basis for our prayer. It's and when he says, you know, Jesus is saying here, he says in verse 7, you're babbling like pagans. And then he says, you heard because of your many words. That in the King James, it says you heap up empty phrases. I love that. You heap up empty phrases. Now, the babbling is empty words. The Greek there actually means empty words. And the many, you heap up many phrases, that means anxious. So these prayers, again, these are not irreligious prayers. These are religious people praying prayers. And he's saying, don't let your prayers be like this. Don't let your prayers be anxious, many words of anxiety. You're coming to somebody and you're like, please hear me. Do you hear me? Is it there? Are you going to answer? No, that's what Jesus is saying. There's a juxtaposition here between the prayers of somebody who sees God as their boss or their landlord and somebody who sees him as a father. Do you see? Now, how does this play out? Well, I can tell you when you find out, and this is really a litmus test for us. This is what Jesus is saying. Are your prayers like this or are they like this? When your prayers aren't answered, does it leave you cold? I've been praying these prayers, Lord, and I'm paying the rent. I'm doing everything I'm supposed to do. I've been to church. I go to a life group. I'm generous with my money, Lord. How come you're not answering my prayers? You're paying the rent. And so you approach it with the wrong heart, and it leaves you cold when your prayers are unanswered. The other thing that can happen is it will leave you anxious if you're not paying the rent. Right? You go to God with your prayers and then you're like, well, there's sin in my life and I haven't been to church or whatever. And now this is going to kind of produce an anxiety. You're going to equate the fact with the fact your prayers haven't been answered is somehow due to your behavior and your self-discipline. That is a complete juxtaposition of what Jesus is saying here. He's saying, look, when you go to pray, pray to God like he's your father. Now, we're modern people, and even if you haven't been to church, you've heard this prayer. I grew up Catholic, and we said it every Sunday, and so in a sense, we've been inoculated to the gravity of that phrase, our Father who art in heaven. What this is dancing around is the doctrine of adoption. This is what you need to understand if you're going to pray this prayer with the heart that Jesus is trying to build in us, that he is your Father. Do you know what a big deal that is? Do you know what a big deal that is? That's amazing. That's amazing. You've been adopted. Now, I didn't understand this. It blows my socks off that God uses these images in our lives to show us what his love is like. He constantly refers to himself as a bridegroom, and he's trying to get us to understand that we're the bride, we're the love of his life. And then we're always referred to as like little children, and you kind of, I tell you what, if you have kids and you held them in your arms for the first time, you understand at a level you never had prior to that what God's love is like. Adoption is what happens to us. And let me just kind of, this is a legal status change, okay, when you're adopted. I had the privilege, one of my really close friends, he's a pastor up in Palo Alto, he adopted a little girl. And those of you who are acquainted with the process, you know that it can be really long, really expensive, very arduous, and often heartbreaking. But the day finally came when they were going to go to the Supreme Courthouse up in Palo Alto, and he asked me if I would photograph the adoption. And I thought, yeah, of course. I've never seen that. I have no idea how it goes. He's been a great friend of me for many years. And so I did. I photographed the adoption. And there was a point in time where the judge, you know, the parents are all sitting down there, and it's kind of crazy because they just carted some guys out in handcuffs, and then we go in there with this little kid and the whole family. The theological implications are astounding. But so we go in there, and I start taking pictures. Last time I was in a courtroom, it didn't go like this. So I was a little nervous. And I start taking pictures. And the judge is like, oh, you can come up here. You can stand behind the bench. I'm like, really? So I did. I got behind the bench. And as they went through the proceedings, I could not control myself. I began sobbing. It was so, so beautiful. And there's a point in time where this couple is sitting there with this little girl who they've been raising since she was an infant. Now she's about two. And they love her to the sky. And in their hearts, it's already been done. But the judge asks a series of questions, kind of like you do in a marriage, like a vow. And he says, you know, I don't remember all of them, but it was like, will you love her? Will you take care of her? Will you provide for her needs? And then he says, and in the event of your passing, will she be entitled to an inheritance? And this is the very last question. And they said, yes. And the judge slammed his gavel. And in that moment, they became a family. They walked into that courtroom, not a family. For all intents and purposes, a group of individuals. And when they left, they were a family. Now do you see? When you pray, our Father, who art in heaven, that means you're a child of God and you're talking to your daddy. Do you understand that that is vastly different from every other faith paradigm which has ever surfaced? Every other philosophy, every other religion says if you do these things, there's going to be blessings associated with it. And if you don't do them, there's going to be curses associated with that. But here, Jesus is saying, look, when you pray, pray like you're praying to your daddy who loves you. Look, in John 1:12, it says this, yet to all who did receive him, to those who believed on his name, he gave the right to become children of God. It doesn't change your behavior. It doesn't change your nature. It changes your status. You are now legally his, and you are entitled to an inheritance. Oh my goodness. John 17:23, then the world will know that you sent me and have loved me even as you have loved them, even as you have loved me. Look at that. I'm going to read that again because I butchered it. Then the world will know that you sent me and have loved them even as you have loved me. Two words there, even as. What is that? Wow. Does that, God the Father, who created, who spoke the universe into existence, he loves you like he loves Jesus. If you have bowed your knee, if you have confessed, if you believe in your heart that Jesus is Lord and he's risen from the dead, God loves you like he loves Jesus. Amen. Now you don't have to approach the throne and, you know, scared to ask or worried about not receiving. You're praying to your Father. Hebrews 4, let us approach God's throne of grace with confidence so that we may receive mercy and find grace to help us in our time of need. Every prayer needs to start, and this is why Jesus starts, our Father. Every prayer needs to start with an understanding that you've been adopted legally. You're God's child. Now the practice of prayer, what does it look like? 1 John 3:1 says, see what great love the Father has lavished on us that we should be called children of God. And that is what we are. Look, that word great, it's the Greek word potapa. You know what it means? What country is that from? That's what it literally means. What country is this from? How great the love the Father has lavished on us. How? I'll meet people and I'll ask them, pastor, usually the faith comes up and, I'm a Christian. Yeah, I'm a Christian. I go to church. I grew up Christian. My family's Christian. When you've got to look at your relationship with God and think, what country is this from? Where did this come from? You should always be perpetually in a state of being absolutely blown away by the fact that the King of the universe calls you his and he loves you like a child. There's a, behold, what great love the Father has lavished on us. Look, you don't say behold if it's something like you're expecting or it's something that's owed to you. Nobody gets their paycheck and says, behold, I got a paycheck. behold is when you receive something you didn't deserve. Behold is when you see something so beautiful, it blows your socks off. It's like lightning. Behold, I'm a Christian. God chose me. Out of all the people in all the earth, he loves me like Jesus. He loves me like his son. Look, Luke 11 says, ask and you will receive. Seek and you will find. Knock and the door will be open. That knock is not it's not the Greek word for like a singular knock. It's not that. It's this. It's banging on the door. Look. How is that type of prayer not annoying or obnoxious when you go to the king of the universe? Like, look at God is holy. Imagine what it like when he appears to Moses in the burning bush. He's holy. You can't even stand in his presence. So how is it that he tolerates us coming to him with these kind of, persistent, and really if it were anyone else but our father, it would be obnoxious. Look, who can wake a king up in the middle of the night for a glass of water? Nobody, except his kid. When my son Luke had the flu for the last 5 days, and he was not doing so well, and when he's coughing in the middle of the night, or he cries out, Mommy, Daddy, do I say, what are you asking for water again? Who are you? Go get it yourself. No, because he's my kid. Now, anybody else tries to wake me up in the middle of the night, we're going to have that first conversation. Look, he loves you like a child, and he's your father. And when you pray, our Father, who art in heaven. He's not your boss, if he's your father. He's not your landlord, if he's your father. You're not a tenant or an employee. You're a child of God. And he says, come to God like you're asking your father. And so there's no amount of asking that ever becomes obnoxious or impetuous. You can lift and you can pray and you can ask for things over and over. And when you know he's your father, when the answer is no or not now, you can trust that he loves you. Look, he loves you like he loves Jesus. That makes the love I have for my own children pale in comparison. He loves you that much. So even when the answer is no or not now, you know that the answer is what you would choose if you had the information he has. What's going to happen right now is I'm going to ask our elders and our prayer team to come forward, and our worship team as well. And they're going to be kind of dispersed around the room. And what I would say is, if there's anything you need prayer for, if there's a besetting sin in your life, something that you've wanted badly for a long time to be free of, you can ask for prayer for that. If you are... If you have sickness, illness, if you're dealing with anything like that, we can anoint your head with oil. We can pray for you. We can ask for God to do more than we can ask or imagine. So we'll have people here up front, also in the corners back there. And I would just invite you, if there's anything at all you need prayer for, you can come, you can receive that. So please, as you're led, come on forward. We're going to have our prayer teams kind of disperse around the sanctuary. So if you don't want to come up here, you can go to any one of those corners. So go ahead, come as you're led.